Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled Supermoons, Eclipses, Offer Treat for Sky Watchers in 2024 by Robin Bradshaw, staff writer. The start of the 2024 calendar year is here, with no shortage of sky-gazing events. This year debuts 12 full moons, four of which will be four supermoons, and one seasonal blue moon. In addition, a penumbral lunar eclipse will be visible for North and South America in March, Starwalk reports, following a total solar eclipse across Mexico and the United States in April, and a black moon near the end of the year will mark the second new moon phase in December as the year wraps up. This report will highlight the lunar calendar, with dates and times for the full moons and new moon phases in 2024, according to time and date, while explaining some of the definitions to help understand the lunar language of the skies. This year offers sky watchers with a seasonal blue moon, and there are two definitions for blue moons, Starwalk explains. The more common definition is when two full moons, such as this month's blue moon, occur in the same month. The second definition of a blue moon relates to having an extra full moon during a season. When a season has four full moons, the third full moon is also called a blue moon or a seasonal blue moon, such as this year. When speaking of supermoons in the lunar calendar, they are slightly closer to Earth than the average full moon, which makes them appear larger and brighter from Earth's perspective. When a full moon takes place, the moon is near its closest approach to Earth, according to time and date. When there is a new moon around the closest point to Earth, it is known as a super new moon. The list above also highlights the moon names that have traveled through generations, dating back to the Native Americans and some from early European settlers, Old Farmer's Almanac said. Many of the names align with nature and the changes of the season. In January, the wolf moon was named after the common occurrence of howling wolves during the month, and February as the snow moon because of the acty icy precipitation and snow during the month. 2024 full moon dates. Thursday, January 25th, wolf moon. Saturday, February 24th, snow moon. Monday, March 25th, worm moon. Tuesday, April 23rd, pink moon. Thursday, May 23rd, flower moon. Friday, June 21st, strawberry moon. Sunday, July 21st, buck moon. Monday, August 19th, sturgeon moon. A supermoon and seasonal blue moon. Wednesday, September 17th, harvest moon and a supermoon. Thursday, October 17th, Hunter Moon's biggest supermoon of 2024. Friday, November 15th, Beaver Moon, supermoon. Sunday, December 15th, Cold Moon. 2024 new moon dates and times. Thursday, January 11th. Friday, February 9th, super new moon. Sunday, March 10th, super new moon. Monday, April 8th, super new moon. Tuesday, May 7th. Thursday, June 6th. Friday, July 5th. Sunday, August 4th. Monday, September 2nd. Wednesday, October 2nd. Friday, November 1st. Sunday, December 1st, and Monday, December 30th, Black New Moon. This article is entitled, As more state agencies turn to AI, Texas plans to monitor impact. By Keaton Peters, The Texas Tribune. When the Texas Workforce Commission became inundated with jobless claims in March 2020, it turned to artificial intelligence. Affectionately named for the agency's former head, Larry Temple, who had died a year earlier, Larry, the chatbot, was designed to help Texans sign up for unemployment benefits. Like a next-generation FAQ page, Larry would field user-generated questions about unemployment cases. Using AI language processing, the bot would determine which answer pre-written by human staff would best fit the user's unique phrasing of the question. The chatbot answered more than 21 million questions before being replaced by Larry 2.0 last March. Larry is one example of the ways artificial intelligence has been used by state agencies. Adaption of the technology in state government has grown in recent years. But that acceleration has also sparked fears of unintended consequences like bias, loss of privacy, or losing control of the technology. This year, the legislature committed to taking a more active role in monitoring how the state is using AI. "This is going to totally revolutionize the way we do government," said State Representative Giovanni Capriglione, Republican Southlake, who wrote a bill aimed at helping the state make better use of AI technology. In June, Governor Greg Abbott signed that bill, House Bill 2060, into law, creating an AI advisory council to study and take inventory of the ways state agencies currently utilize AI and assess whether the state needs a code of ethics for AI. The council's role in monitoring what the state is doing with AI does not involve writing final policy. Artificial intelligence describes a class of technology that emulates and builds upon human reasoning through computer systems. The chatbot uses language processing to understand users' questions and match it to predetermined answers. New tools, such as ChatGPT, are categorized as generative AI because the technology generates a unique answer based on a user prompt. AI is also capable of analyzing large data sets and using that information to automate tasks previously performed by humans. Automated decision-making is at the center of HB 2060. More than one-third of Texas state agencies are already utilizing some form of artificial intelligence, according to a 2022 report from the Texas Department of Information Resources. The Workforce Commission also has an AI tool for job seekers that provides customized recommendations of job openings. Various agencies are using AI for translating languages into English and call center tools such as speech-to-text. AI is also used to enhance cybersecurity and fraud detection. Automation is also used for time-consuming work in order to increase work output and efficiency, according to a statement from the Department of Information Resources. One example of this could be tracking budget expenses and invoices. In 2020, DIR launched an AI Center for Excellence aimed at helping state agencies implement more AI technology. Participation in the DIR's center is voluntary, and each agency typically has its own technology team. So the extent of automation and AI deployment at state agencies is not closely tracked. Right now, Texas state agencies have to verify that the technology they use meets safety requirements set by state law. But there are no specific disclosure requirements on the types of technology or how they are used. HB 2060 will require each agency to provide that information to the AI Advisory Council by July 2024. We want agencies to be creative, Capriglione said. He favors finding more uses for AI that go well beyond chatbots, but recognizes there are concerns around poor data quality stopping the system from working as intended. We're going to have to set some rules. As an adoption of AI has grown, so have worries around the ethics and functionality of the technology. The AI Advisory Council is the first step toward oversight of how the technology is being deployed. The 7-member council will include a member of the State House and the Senate, an executive director, and 4 individuals appointed by the governor with expertise in AI, ethics, law enforcement, and constitutional law. Samantha Shorey is an assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin who has studied the social implications of artificial intelligence, particularly the kind designed for increased automation. She is concerned that if technology is empowered to make more decisions, it will replicate and exacerbate social inequality. It might move us towards the end goal more quickly, but is it moving us towards an end goal that we want? Proponents of using more AI view automation as a way to make government work more efficiently. Harnessing the latest technology could help speed up case management for social services, provide immediate summaries of lengthy policy analysis, or streamline the hiring and training process for new government employees. However, Shorey is cautious about the possibility of artificial intelligence being brought into decision-making processes such as determining who qualifies for social service benefits or how long someone should be on parole. Earlier this year, the U.S. Justice Department began investigating allegations that a Pennsylvania county's AI model, intended to help improve child welfare, was discriminating against parents with disabilities and resulting in their children being taken away. AI systems tend to absorb whatever biases there are in the past data, said Suresh Venkata Subramanian, director of the Center for Technology Responsibility at Brown University. Artificial intelligence that is trained on data that includes any kind of gender, religious, race, or other bias is at risk of learning to discriminate. In addition to the problem of flawed data reproducing social inequality, there are also privacy concerns around the technology's dependence on collecting large amounts of data. What the AI could be doing with that data over time is also driving fears that humans will lose some control over the technology. As AI gets more and more complicated, it's very hard to understand how these systems are working and why they're making the decisions the way they do, Venkata Subramanian said. That fear is shared by Jason Green Lowe, executive director at the Center for AI Policy, a group that has lobbied for stricter AI safety in Washington, D.C. With the accelerating pace of technology and a lack of regulatory oversight, Green Lowe said, soon we might find ourselves in a world where AI is mostly steering, and the world starts to reorient itself to serve the AI's interests rather than human interest. Some technical experts, however, are more confident that humans will remain in the driver's seat of increasing AI deployment. Alex DeMacis, a professor of electrical engineering and computer science at the University of Texas at Austin, worked on the Artificial Intelligence Commission for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. In DeMacis's view, AI systems should be transparent and subject to independent evaluation known as red teaming, a process in which the underlying data and decision-making process of the technology are scrutinized by multiple experts to determine if more robust safety measures are necessary. You cannot hide behind AI, Dimakis said. Beyond transparency and evaluation, Dimakis said the state should enforce existing laws against whoever created the AI, in any case where the technology produces an outcome that violates the law. Apply the existing laws without being confused that an AI system is in the middle. The AI Advisory Council will submit its findings and recommendations to the legislature by December 2024. In the meantime, interest is growing in deploying AI at all levels of government. DIR works with an artificial intelligence user group made up of representatives from state agencies, higher education, and local government interested in implementing AI. Interest in the user group is growing by the day, according to a DIR spokesperson. The group has more than 300 members, representing more than 85 different entities. Disclosure: University of Texas at Austin and U.S. Chamber of Commerce have been financial supporters of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. This article is entitled Bundle of Joy. Say hello to Damien, Midland's first baby of the new year, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Every year, the unspoken race for the firstborn baby of the year fills hospitals around the world. Usually, midnight or 12:01 a.m. debuts mark the winners. But here in the tall city, those joyful cries didn't start until well into the Midland Memorial morning. Making his entrance at 6:03 a.m. to Mom Crystal Lujan and Dad Gennaro Lujan, Damien Lujan weighed 7 pounds and 4 ounces and measured in at 20 inches long. To celebrate the special occasion, the Lujan family received a gift basket arranged by Becky's Flowers, full of items for Damien and Crystal. Items included baby soap, bibs, books, pacifiers, and a tumbler courtesy of Hope Chest, Midland's health incentives program for pregnant and parenting women, encouraging responsible behavior during and after pregnancy. Crinkle tag toys from Nifty Knitters, baby's first ornament and gift card to Miss Casey's, a free postpartum session at Anthus, burp rag and t-shirt from the Little Gym, a local gymnastic studio, and a stuffed animal. This article is entitled County Leaders to Discuss Sheriff's Office Grant, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Texas Senate Bill 22 will be discussed at the Midland County Commissioners Court meeting on Wednesday. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner added the discussion topic to the agenda. SB 22, which passed in the 88th Texas Legislature, relates to the establishment of grant programs to provide financial assistance to qualified sheriffs and prosecutors' offices in rural counties across the state, according to the Texas Capitol website. In more detail, the Texas Capitol website describes a grant in this context as a grant authorized to be awarded by the controller under the Rural Sheriff's Office Salary Assistance Grant Program established by the bill. A qualified county, according to the bill, is a county with a population of 300,000 or less. According to the Texas Capitol website, a qualified county may apply for the grant no later than 30 days after the first day of their fiscal year. The Texas Comptroller will award the grant to a qualified county that applies for the grant using money appropriated to the controller for that purpose, the Texas Capitol website states. A qualified county that applies for the grant will receive $250,000 if the county has a population of less than 10,000. $350,000 if the county has a population of 10,000 or more and less than 50,000. $500,000 if the county has a population of 50,000 or more and 300,000 or less. Counties awarded the grant can use the money to provide a minimum salary of $75,000 to the county sheriff and $45,000 for each deputy who makes motor vehicle stops in the routine performance of their duties, among other uses. The Midland County Commissioner's Court was moved to Wednesday because of the New Year holiday. Meetings will resume at their 9 a.m. Tuesday slot for the remainder of the year. This article is entitled, Odessa Mobile Home Fire Claims Life During Weekend, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Odessa Fire Rescue responded to a fire on the 6500 block of North Cypress Avenue around 2 a.m. Saturday. Once fire crews arrived, the mobile home was already on fire. According to reports, Odessa Fire Rescue teams were able to knock down the fire quickly. However, a bed-bound victim was found in an area that had been fully engulfed by the fire. Another individual was transported to the hospital for smoke inhalation, wrote City Communication Director Monica McDaniel in a press release. There is no information as to what initially caused the fire. Residents are encouraged to keep their surroundings clear of flammable items, to check smoke detectors regularly, and to have a well-communicated fire escape plan. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, January 3rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, More Deliciousness Headed to Midland. Three new restaurants set to open in Tall City this year. By Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Dutch Brothers, 4102 North Big Spring Street. The long-awaited opening for the Midland Dutch Brothers coffee location comes to an end this week. A little over 5 months of construction and a delayed finish resulted in the new 950-square-foot shop located in front of the Holmes 2 Suites by Hilton, across the street from Starbucks, and down the road from Black Rifle. Operator Shania Motlow took to Facebook to share the store's opening news. On Friday, Dutch Brothers opens to the public with a functioning drive-through and walk-up option for guests. However, from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, Midlanders can show a flyer for a free 16-ounce drink of their choice. The spot offers cold brews, seasonal creations, smoothies, frappuccinos, Americanos, teas, lemonades, hot cocoa, chais, sodas, and more. Operating hours starting Friday run 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week. Kokomo, 4911 East 42nd Street. After just 9 months in business, Korean snack shop Kokomo is expanding their Permian Basin reach into Odessa. Owner Maggie Fan, part of the Fan family who own Odessa's Crab City, opened the shop in Northwest Midland in hopes of providing the community with a new cultural experience through snacks, desserts, and drinks. Delectables such as mochi donuts, essentially a ring of donut holes, but much lighter than a traditional American donut, Korean corn dogs, both sweet and savory meat and cheese creations deep-fried with potatoes or other toppings, boba tea, and much more make up the menu. As of now, an opening date for the new Odessa location has not been announced, but all updates can be found at bit.ly/3RKQLN5. Providencia, 3200 Mockingbird Lane. Another business joins the crew over at the new Summit Center, coming to Midland in the late spring, early summer. From the mind of Nemesio Torres, owner of Cancun Grill downtown, comes Providencia. The upscale Mexican restaurant maintains Torres's mission of stellar drinks, food, and service, while offering different cuisine compared to the Wall Street hotspot. All fresh ingredients and strong passion for the cooking game make their way to Providencia as well. Fan favorites from Cancun Grill, such as jalapeno corn cakes, will make the bill, along with a full bar. Seating capacity will be between 90 and 120 people. This is the Life Tributes column. Marilyn Matthews, September 19, 1940 to December 26, 2023. Marilyn Matthews, 83, of Midland, passed away on December 26th. She was born on September 19, 1940, in Calgary, Alberta, and was the oldest of four children. Marilyn is survived by her daughter, Leslie Young, of Dallas, her son, Chris Johnson, wife, Michelle Johnson, of Midland. She was also grandmother to Maxwell Young, Alex Johnson, Allison Johnson, and Andrew Johnson. Marilyn was preceded in death by her father, Charles Matthews, her mother, Mary Matthews, and sisters Joan McCrory and Teresa Matthews. A ceremony to honor Marilyn's life will be held on January 6th at 2 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to the American Cancer Society or the American Heart Association in Marilyn's memory. Janet Gurley Whitman, June 6, 1938 to December 26, 2023. Janet Gurley Whitman, 85, died suddenly on December 26th. Janet was born on June 6, 1938 in Kansas City, Missouri, to George Hammond and Agnes Helen Lowe Gurley. She was the wife to the late Right Reverend Alan Whitman. Survivors include her brother, George H. Gurley II, Susan, sister Ann Rogers, Jim, daughters Allison Zimmer de Atide, Raphael, and Gail Zimmer, stepdaughters Jan Whitman, Terry Whitman, Cindy Whitman, and stepson Peter Whitman, Gail, as well as three grandchildren. A graveside service will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January 9th, at Corinth Cemetery, Prairie Village, Kansas, followed by a memorial service at 3 p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Kansas City. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Janet's memory to the National Bearded Collie Rescue at BCCA Charitable Trust. At bccacharitabletrust.org. Rita Carnes Anderson, July 25, 1954 to December 27, 2023. Rita Carnes Anderson, 69 years old, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, December 27th, in the comfort of her home and surrounded by her children. Rita was born July 25, 1954 in Midland to Howard and Lita Perry. Rita is survived by her three children, Heath Anderson, Heather Anderson, and Lacey Washer, as well as seven grandchildren. Rita is preceded in death by her parents, Howard Perry and Robert and Lita Pruitt. Rita's final wishes were to forego a service, and ashes will be spread by her children in two of her favorite places, Ruidoso, New Mexico, and Corpus Christi, Texas. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations, gifts can be made by contacting Lene Lopez or Kaylee Jameson by calling 432-208-5530, or can be sent to 3300 North A Street, Building 1, Suite 220 in Midland. Much appreciation to Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Johnny W. Whitley, February 29, 1952 to November 29, 2023. Johnny Wayne Whitley passed away November 29th unexpectedly at his home with his wife Tisa by his side. Johnny was born in Odessa February 29, 1952, along with his twin sister, Vicky. Johnny was preceded in death by his father, Harold C. Whitley, nephew, Elliot Whitley, and grandson, Timothy Whitley. He is survived by his mother, Helen J. Morris, and his wife, love, and life partner, Tisa M. Whitley. Brothers Douglas Whitley, Jimmy Whitley, and wife, Mim, twin sister and best bud, Vicky, and her husband, Javier, sons Jeremy Whitley and wife Connie, Shay M. Jones and wife Sloane, Stacy Ray Jones and wife Christina, as well as six grandchildren. Memorial service will be held Saturday, January 6th at 11 a.m. at the Crossroad Church Chapel, 6901 State Highway 191 in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, you may make donations to the West Texas Boys Ranch in San Angelo or a charity of your choice. Burke Moore, October 17, 2002 to December 27, 2023. Midland, it is with profound sadness and disbelief that we announce the unexpected passing of our beloved Burke Arthur Moore, who departed this world far too soon on the morning of December 27th. Born on October 17, 2002, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Burke's journey on this earth left behind a legacy of joy and a heartwarming, playful sense of humor that sprinkled sweetness into our lives. His family, Nia, David, and Georgia Moore, invite friends and loved ones to a celebration of life on January 5th at 10 a.m. at First Methodist Church in Midland, 300 North Main. He is survived by his mother, Nia Moore, father, David Moore, and sister, Georgia Moore. His memory will forever be cherished by uncles Henry Burke, William Burke, and Dan Moore, Aunt Ashley Burke, grandmother Glenda Moore. Burke was met in heaven by his grandfathers, George Moore and Jeff Burke, and grandmother Gail Vinson. In lieu of flowers, the family would like you to consider making a donation to an organization of your choice that supports youth. Tommy Albertson, July 9, 1929 to December 31, 2023. San Angelo. Tommy David Albertson gained his wings and golden golf clubs on December 31st at 8:08 a.m. Tommy was born on July 9, 1929, to Jefferson and Annie Albertson at home in the oil fields of Mexia, Texas. Tommy was the second of five children. On July 3, 1949, he married Geraldine Esther Harrell and had three children. Geraldine passed away in January 1973. On August 14, 1973, he married Carolyn Smith and blended their two families. In 1979, Brian David Albertson was born and then adopted into the family, making a total of six children. Preceding him in death were his parents, Jefferson and Annie, sisters Ruby Gilmore, Cleo Scarce, Geneva Smith, first wife Geraldine, and son Duke Albertson. Tommy is survived by wife Carolyn Albertson, daughters Wanda Greenshield, Teresa Cibaloro, and husband Eddie, Cindy Weatherby, and sons Randy Smith and wife Krista and Brian and wife Leah, along with numerous grandkids and great-grands. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to a favorite charity. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, January 3rd at Harper Funeral Home from 5 to 7 p.m. The funeral service will be held at Harper Funeral Home in San Angelo on Thursday, January 4th at 10 a.m. The graveside service will be held at Glenrest Cemetery in Big Lake on Thursday, January 4th at 2 p.m. Family and friends may share condolences and sign the online register book at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Johnny Rangel, September 27, 1969 to December 30, 2023. Johnny Rangel, age 54, of Midland, went to be with the Lord on December 30th. Johnny was born to Fabian and Teresa Rangel on September 27, 1969. Johnny was a loving husband, father, and uncle. He was happily married to Dolly Ann Maldonado for 31 years. His life revolved around his family, especially his grandchildren. Johnny is preceded in death by his father, Fabian Rangel, and sister-in-law, Lupe Rangel. Left to cherish his memory are his mother, Teresa Rangel, sons Juanito Rangel, Junior Martinez, Michael Martinez, Faustino Martinez, Jamie, Carlos Martinez, Dayami, Mark Anthony, Samantha, as well as siblings Fabian Rangel, Carlos Rangel, Paula, Adam Rangel, Lupe, and sister Eva Rangel. He is also survived by his 14 beloved grandkids. A service to celebrate Johnny's life will be held on January 5th at 10 a.m. at the Hope Chapel at Bayberry Funeral Home in Midland. Estella Trowbridge. Estella Trowbridge, 92, of Florida, passed away December 25th. Graveside service will be held at 9 a.m. Friday, January 5th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Peggy Goetz. Peggy Goetz, 73, of Midland, passed away December 29th. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, January 5th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for January 3rd, 2024. Acceleration Academy's names new CEO. Kelly Campbell's motivation to take over as Chief Executive Officer of Acceleration Academies was the great work that the nation's leading provider of tech-enabled flexible education is doing in being able to concentrate on high-need students. The network includes Acceleration Academies of Ector County in Odessa. Campbell said it helps students who have struggled in a traditional education setting and gives them a chance to succeed in a hybrid environment. Students may be working a full-time job and need to complete some of their courses during off hours or in a virtual setting. Our software enables that, and then we couple that with the ability to come in and be supported in the physical academy with all of the other wraparound services that are important for the success of these kids. And then we couple that with the ability to come in and be supported in the physical academy with all of the other wraparound services that are important for the success of these kids. Being able to have a graduate candidate advocate who is working as a mentor and helping those kids be successful and ensuring course completions on time, what this has allowed me to be able to do is take my background around building at scale and using technology to fuel a terrific, flexible experience for students and then be able to impact even more of these kids across the country and give everyone an opportunity to succeed, Campbell said. Campbell spent 17 years at Discovery Education Education, the global leader in standards-based digital content for K-12 school districts, and most recently served as president of the company. She brings a track record of success leading in sales and marketing, product development, and operation functions for pioneering educational technology organizations. Acceleration Academies will have partnerships with about 20 districts by the end of the year. In some districts, Campbell said, they have multiple academies, such as in Clark County, Nevada. The academies grew very organically to date. There are two founders. Dr. Joey Wise, who is a former superintendent, came up with the concept of Acceleration Academies and being able to provide an alternative education program for kids who are really struggling on the other side of the equation. The other co-founder, Steve Campbell, was a founder of the technology side. These two businesses came together and over the last several years have created a model that is very operationally sound and very instructionally sound, Kelly Campbell said. Campbell said Acceleration Academy's instructional content model is beautiful and very well delivered. She added that what she can help with is finding more students, partner with more districts, and help bring this model to more students across the country. The company has a concentration of schools in Florida, in Nevada, a little bit in some other spots around the country, but Ector County right now is the only county in Texas. I see a tremendous opportunity with the leadership that Dr. Murray has shown in being able to show the success of the program in Texas. I'd love to see more kids benefiting from it in your state, Campbell said. Discussing the importance of a high school diploma, Campbell said if a child doesn't graduate from high school, that means about $500,000 in lost revenue and salaries that they would make over the course of their lifetime, and it's about an additional $500,000 in expenses that the economy would bear on behalf of that individual, whether it's welfare or some other system that needs to be provided to help them. If you expand those impacts to that child's family and the community, Campbell said, it's an economic and more imperative. Campbell said, it's an economic and moral imperative to create a way for these students to succeed. In most cases, these kids, they don't think of themselves as dropouts. They were more pushed out. They were in a situation where they could be successful. They may need to work full-time, or maybe somebody had a baby or mental health challenges. Campbell said, maybe getting back into a classroom post-COVID was very difficult. So there's all these reasons are not because the kids don't want to go to school. It's because they have a situation that makes it unsuccessful. We're both creating a situation where we can support the students. We can support the school district because it should help provide more graduates into the system. Getting a high school diploma also creates more and better opportunities for students. And a lot of the softer ways as well that aren't necessarily things that are being reported on, the sense of worth, the sense of accomplishment, the ability to get up and find a purpose. It's really, really compelling, Campbell added. The technology used by Acceleration Academies also provides engagement and an opportunity to learn in a different way than a traditional textbook, for example. They can work their way through the content at their own pace. The software enables them to reach out to their content coach in real time if they're struggling with a concept and get that response right away. And then utilization of interactive media and little checks for understanding to make sure they're learning the content as they go along, Campbell said. She added that they are able to tell in real time on a day-to-day basis how many students are working their way through the courses, where they are in the course, and their percentage of course completion. All of this data enables the graduation candidate advocates to really up to the minute on each of the kids in the program and then intervene as necessarily, either to give them words of encouragement, you're doing great, or wow, you haven't been in the system in 2 days and your course completion is a little behind schedule. What can we do to help? What can we do to get you back on track? That use of data is super compelling and really starts to deliver on individualized learning plans for everybody, Campbell said. Co-founders Steve Campbell and Wise remain actively involved in the business, a news release said. A change in leadership came as Acceleration Education Academies is rapidly expanding its school district partnerships nationwide to provide a flexible, supportive, and personalized program for students who are not experiencing success in a traditional high school, the release said. As our organization has matured and we are serving a record number of students, we are excited to welcome additional leadership expertise to help us reach the next level. We must support our accelerated growth so that we can serve more students and school districts while maintaining the efficacy and integrity of our model, current CEO and co-founder Steve Campbell said in the release. MMH welcomes first baby of 2024. By Odessa American, Midland Memorial Hospital would like to congratulate the Lujan family of Midland on the birth of their new baby boy. The first child born in Midland in 2024, Damian Lujan, was born at 6:03 a.m. to Crystal and Gennaro Lujan, weighing 7 pounds 4 ounces and 20 inches long. The family will be presented with a gift basket full of items for the new baby boy and mom. Gift basket items include baby soap, bibs, baby books, pacifiers, and tumbler from Hope Chest, a program sponsored by Midland Health and Midland Memorial Foundation, crinkle tag toys from Nifty Knitters of Midland and the Hospital Auxiliary, baby's first ornament and gift card from Miss Casey's, Anthus free postpartum session with their counselor from Anthus, burp rag and t-shirt from the Little Gym, a stuffed animal, and the gift basket was arranged by Becky's Flowers. Midland Memorial Hospital would like to thank all these businesses and individuals for their donations to our first baby of 2024. Caring for Youth, Mental Health in the Permian Basin. By Odessa American, January 2, 2024. How are the children? This is the question mental health advocate, Reverend Dr. Sarah Lund, compels us to ask our community. Her recent book, Blessed Youth, Breaking the Silence About Mental Illness in Children and Teens, has impacted thousands. An ecumenical coalition of local churches invites you to hear Dr. Lung speak, answer questions, and lead discussion in small groups at a hearty luncheon. Educators, clergy, parents, therapists, and all who work with kids are encouraged to participate. Caring for Youth Mental Health in the Permian Basin is scheduled from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 16th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Ray Greathouse Recital Hall. Tickets are available at Eventbrite for $15. For questions or additional information, please contact Pastor Don Weeks at Connection Christian Church at 432-332-2954.
MCH celebrates first baby delivered in 2024. Medical Center Hospital is celebrating its first delivery of 2024. Baby Dawson Mark Garvin was born at 8:13 a.m. January the 1st and weighed in at 5 pounds and 12 ounces. His proud parents are Courtney and Matthew Garvin. The Medical Center Health System Foundation and Children's Miracle Network at MCHS provided the family with several gifts, including lots of wipes, swaddles, and a pack and play. MCH would like to congratulate the family of Little Dawson for ringing in 2024 with a beautiful baby boy. UTBB Professor Penn's Children's Book. University of Texas Permian Basin Associate Professor of Literacy Tara Wilson doesn't just teach her subject, she's taking action. Wilson recently published her first book, a children's book, called Randy Rattlesnake. I have always wanted to write a children's book. It's kind of been on my bucket list, and so I finally chose the opportunity to start writing a children's book, Wilson said. She went with Randy Rattlesnake because she wanted the book to be different, with a cute, friendly rattlesnake. It also has ties to West Texas and the oil and gas industry. The book talks about the industry in terms a second grader and someone who doesn't know much about the industry can understand. Randy also has his own Facebook page. I've learned a lot, and there are people out in the industry that have helped me with Randy Rattlesnake. It talks about Randy, who is a landowner. A landman approaches him about drilling on his land. They go through that process in the book, Wilson said. She plans to pen additional Randy Rattlesnake books. This one ends with a construction engineer coming to set up on Randy's property, ready to start drilling. Book two will pick up from there about the drilling process. I don't know how many books there's going to be. I do want it to be a series, but I have no clue because I don't know what's all involved. A children's book can only be so long, you know. We don't want it to be too long. I hope I'm able to finish the whole process. In each book, my goal is to also have 2 to 3 jobs explained. In one book, it is explained what a landman does, construction engineer, and a drilling engineer. So those 3 jobs are explained in book one. I don't know which jobs will be explained in book two, Wilson said. She added that she has gotten a lot of help from people and companies in the industry who have helped her understand how things work and explain them in a way that lay people can understand. Wilson said she hopes to have the next book out by March or April. It seems people like the book because I was kind of worried about it, so we're going to go with number 2, she said. She noted that there are tons of other oil and gas jobs, but she wouldn't be able to include them in the book because there's only so much room. I'm going to keep it short and simple and explain the overall process and highlight some of the jobs in the oil and gas field. Randy Rattlesnake is going to be the only animal, Wilson said. She named the landman Wayne Williams. He's a human. Everybody's a human except for Randy and his family, who are friendly rattlesnakes, she stressed. The book is available from the publisher's website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble's online, and Walmart online. She hopes to go to some local businesses and ask them if they would like to buy a few copies and then sell it. I've had some schools ask if I would come read it, so I'm going to after Christmas. So that's really exciting, Wilson said. Wilson, who is from Houston, has had schools from that area who want her to come read her book as well.
Obituaries. Johnny Wayne Whitley passed away November 23rd. He was born February 29th, 1952. Memorial service will be January 6th, 11 a.m. at Crossroads Church Chapel. Amelia Valdez Millie Pena, 75 of Houston, died Thursday, December 28th. Celebration of life will be held at 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, January 3rd at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral service will be at a date and time to be announced in Wharton, Texas. Marilyn Matthews, 83, of Midland, passed away December 26th. She was born on September 19, 1940, in Calgary. Service will be January 6th at 2 p.m. at the Universal Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland. Guadalupe Derez Lupe Gonzalez, 86, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 23rd, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. December 30th and was held 2 p.m. December 30th at the home of Leticia and Brian Rinke. Milton Drake, 81, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 19th, in Midland. Graveside service was held at 2 p.m. December 30th in Santa Ana Cemetery Pavilion. Tammy Sue Craig. No services have been scheduled for Sammy Sue Craig, 57, of Odessa, who died Friday, December 22nd in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sherry M. Umstadt passed away the evening of December 20th after a long spell of health issues. The family wishes to thank those who helped in Sherry's life. Catherine Janet Fentress, 74 entered the presence of our Lord on Thursday, November 16th in Odessa. The celebration of life was held 10 a.m. Saturday, December 30th at Stonegate Odessa Church. Wanda Frances Rusty Ludwell passed away peacefully from this life to meet her Savior on December 26th. Service will be January 13th at 10:30 a.m. at Emmanuel Baptist Church.
This is the Dear Abby column. Husband's change of heart wasn't so sudden after all. Dear Abby, 3 months ago, my husband of 30 years came home from work, told me he wasn't happy anymore, and said he wanted a divorce. He announced he was moving in with his brother until he could find a place. 6 days later, I found out he'd moved in with a woman he'd been seeing for a few months. I am devastated. He flaunts his new heifer all around town, forcing her on our granddaughters and rubbing her in my face. My divorce has been filed on the grounds of adultery. I can't believe he dragged my adult children into the middle of this and made them lie to me. I have been trying to let go, but how do you let go of someone who gave you so much to remember? I'm still very much in love with him. After such a long marriage, must I just let it end like this? Signed, Dumbfounded in Tennessee. Dear Dumbfounded, I suppose you could talk to your lawyer and try to drag out the divorce, hoping your husband will come to his senses. But at some point, you will have to admit to yourself that the man you married isn't the person you thought he was. You have every right to feel pain and anger, but your time and money would be better spent in the office of a licensed mental health professional. That your adult children went along with keeping you in the dark is shameful. It will take time to work through this, and the sooner you start, the better. Dear Abby, I moved to a rural area a couple of years ago and was surprised at how friendly my neighbors were. They seemed eager to help at first. I got sick and had to spend a few days in the hospital. I asked the couple to please feed and water my pets until I could come home. They did, but they also made a copy of my house keys, entered my home after I returned to work, and stole several thousand dollars worth of stuff from me. I am hurt and very angry over this. The police said I have to show receipts to prove ownership of the things that were taken. But most of it I have owned for years, and I no longer have the receipts. I'm going to confront this couple, but how do I get over what they did? I can't believe how trashy and low class they are. They both have jobs. I live alone on one salary. A lot of the things they stole, I had to save up to pay for. They are nothing more than liars and thieves. What do you suggest? Signed, Victimized in Oklahoma. Dear Victimized, please accept my sympathy. You trusted your neighbors and they took advantage. But the horse is out of the barn. Change the locks on your house if you haven't already done it. Install security cameras linked to your cell phone so you have a record of who enters your property when you are out. Photograph and list the serial numbers on your valuable items and store it away from home. A safety deposit box would be a safe place. And insure any items of value so you are protected in case it happens again. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.